98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Weekly Blast.
To win an NBA championship, you have to be willing to lose. You have to be willing to lose a playoff series and stay the course, because not always losing a playoff series means failure. And you have to be willing to lose money, maybe even a lot of money. And this is going to be the final frontier for our own Robert Sarver. Sarver's given us a lot of reason for hope recently. He finally anteed up for a real head coach. He didn't play games with Devin Booker's max contract. He didn't blink at the 86 mil attached to Chris Paul. But will he pay to sustain this? Will he pay to improve this team, to keep this team together? If DeAndre Ayton has a major breakthrough sometime in the next 2 months, and we're all keeping our fingers crossed, the Suns are going to be title contenders. They're also going to become very expensive very quickly, with extensions coming up for Ayton and Mikal Bridges, and maybe even another contract for Paul. Now, I've learned that most all owners want to win, but they want to lose money even less. Not everyone is a Jerry Colangelo or a Dr. Jerry Buss or a Robert Kraft. No doubt this will be a real nice problem to have down the road. It means these Suns are just starting a new era of contending basketball, but let's hope this time our owner learns from his past mistakes. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. Test drive the ultimate driving machine at the newly renovated Chapman BMW in Chandler, at Chapman BMW on Camelback. You can shop online at chapmanbmw.com.
Yeah, it seems strange to be talking about this after a decade of futility, for the most part, for the Phoenix Suns, but getting a taste of success can certainly change your taste buds. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, true.
The Suns have been a successful team this season, top four team in the Western Conference. Really not that far, top four record in all of basketball, really, at this point, going into the game tonight against Chicago. They're pertinent questions that do loom in the future on a couple of third-year players right now. Mikal Bridges is developing into one of the best defensive players in all of basketball. Oh, and by the way, he could shoot it a little bit too, mm-hmm. and has increased his confidence on the offensive end. DeAndre Ayton is a number one overall pick who's put up pretty respectable statistics and continuing to develop defensively. And I think the offensive drop-off this year, Bic, is just due to a decrease in shots. I think the reason why his scoring average is down, he's taking about four less shots per game, mm-hmm. On average. Defensively, there are strides being made there. Is he as consistent as the Suns would like? I don't think there's any question. The answer is no on that right now.
Mm-hmm.
But they are hell-bent on getting him right. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And that's an organizational thing.
They've been working it. It's one of the things I'm going to be watching tonight. At the end of the last game against Charlotte, there was a timeout in which DeAndre Ayton sat down and he looked right over at the two guys, the two leaders on the team, like he often does. And a lot of times during those timeout situations, DeAndre gets a talking to. Forceful in some occasions, but it's constant, generally speaking. This time there were no words, and I think there was a lot of frustration. I think it was maybe fatigue and exhaustion. I'm going to be very curious to see what this whole thing looks like tonight, because DeAndre Ayton's the blind spots in his game, the erratic performances, the erratic stretches of play, even inside good performances, this last one came at a really costly time. A series of plays right when the Suns had navigated back to tie the game, and a series of mental errors, not all DeAndre Ayton's fault, but he was a party to all of them, and that let that game slip away for good. So the consequences of DeAndre Ayton's shortcomings came to the fore against Charlotte because of when they happened, and that is one of the things that I've said all along from the start of the season. One of the beauties of the addition of Chris Paul to pair with Devin Booker is it means less spotlight, less expectations on DeAndre Ayton to be this worthy of the number one overall pick. So this has allowed him to kind of grow a little bit and learn a little bit and be a good teammate and all that kind of stuff. But the flip side of that is if you're now on a team that is that good, that's going to be playing very important games, you got to be on it, especially in the last 5 minutes of these games. Because this is where anybody that you know this, anybody who loves basketball, you know the deal in the playoffs. You got to do the things that you have to do to compete against really good teams on a night-by-night basis, but you've got to perform in the final 5 minutes. You can't be hiding guys on the court because those guys will be exploited and exposed. It's why good players who are terrible free throw shooters struggle to get on the court at the end of playoff games.
Mm-hmm.
And that we've seen that issue before with Shaquille O'Neal in Phoenix. And so all of this stuff, I think, is in the air about where this team is going. And if they get the piece right, and if he continues to improve in the next 2 months, then the Suns have got something really dangerous in a good way. And we all hope they get there. The bigger question, as I applied in the blast, is what's going to happen with this? Because this was a topic of conversation. I think we should roll this tape back from Bill Simmons and Zach Lowe in their podcast when they spent a good chunk of time talking about the situation in Phoenix. And in my opinion, for those who don't like Bill Simmons, I think he was really spot on.
Ayton, to me, is one of the most interesting players in the league in the next 2 or 3 years. A guy who could potentially swing the balance of power in the league if he hits his ceiling or versus not coming close to his ceiling. Mikal Bridges is going to get paid a lot of money.
Mm.
A lot of money. I think people need to start preparing themselves for like the 4-year, $85 million extension.
Oh, I thought you were going to say 100, and I wasn't going to blink.
Or whatever it is.
If you said 4 for 100, I was just going to stare at you.
And Book is going to get what Book, he's already got his big deal. Cam Johnson will get a decent deal. Do they want to re-sign Chris Paul in 2 years? Maybe not. I don't know. Like, I think the money is going to start adding up fast. Like, if you give a max to Ayton, and you can laugh at DeAndre Ayton getting a max. Number one picks who put up numbers like he does typically get the max after their rookie extensions or something close to it. The bill gets pretty big, pretty fast for Robert Sarver.
Zach, are you insinuating that Robert might have a history of maybe not paying for expensive teams?
I'm just saying it gets expensive. You start coming up on the that's the thing about being a young, exciting team. You blink an eye and it's like, oh my God, we're over the tax. We just paid all these guys.
It's a true story. We've experienced this in Phoenix with Joe Johnson. We experienced it with Sean Marion's unhappiness. Pat Riley famously called it the disease of me. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
It's when you have this great collective effort going on, and then you have success, and now you want to get paid, and not everybody does. And then if you're the guy that doesn't, you're not happy anymore. All this stuff has got to be managed, and it's got to be managed a lot better than the Suns did in the past. When I say that to win a championship, you have to be able to lose. If you have a team that's capable of winning a championship, and you get to the Western Conference Finals, and you lose, you have to be okay with that. The Suns got to the point where they were chasing so hard against San Antonio that they got off course, that they lost their patience. They lost their ability to say, you know what, we're in the game, and sometimes those are the results when it comes to human competition. You can't, it's not like producing widgets or something like that. You can't control the outcome no matter how much money you pour into it, and you have to reconcile that. Suns didn't do that well in the Mike D'Antoni era. Mike D'Antoni will be the first to tell you that. We panicked.
Mm-hmm.
We got mad at each other. We sniped at each other. We made trades. We ditched the plan.
You never forget that they were in first place in the Western Conference when the Shaq deal went down.
That's right. Yeah. And then so as for the owner, you got the Joe Johnson incident back in the day when the Suns first had a great thing going. And that's, in retrospect, that's okay. That was Robert Sarver's rookie mistake. But many years later, there was the Amari Stoudemire issue where Robert Sarver looked at him and said, that's not a good investment. That's not a good long-term investment. You, and among others, have stated all along that you really thought had they brought him back, you'd get one championship out of that. Well, one championship is worth it.
I agree with that, and I'll believe that until I'm no longer on this earth, that the non-guaranteeing of the last 2 years of that contract, had they gone the full guarantee for 5 years, it would have been a championship in year one, in my opinion. It's impossible to say that, but I do, you know, judging on what happened that year, I think that Suns team would have been better than the team that won the championship.
Yep.
You'd probably regret it at the end.
Maybe. I
mean, the Knicks regretted
slot.
Yeah, but
the Knicks regretted
not,
that but, at the
as
end.
But not if you win a championship, you're not.
Yeah. And as opposed to what? The last 10 years?
Right. That's
that they didn't. I mean, they regretted everything else they did anyway.
Well, it's
here's the question.
If you're, I'm just going to say this. I think that along the growth, Robert Sarver is, you know him. He's a very combative, very competitive person, and I think that he's the type of businessman that prides himself on making good decisions. That he doesn't make stinker losing money kind of endeavors, and so I think that he's the type because of how he has competed to build his fortune. It's by never making bad business decisions. And you've got to be able to make bad business decisions. You've got to be willing to lose a lot of money to win a championship in a lot of cases. Well, you just have to.
If you look at the 7 seconds or less run, they've changed out some pieces. They lost some pieces. At any point from the beginning of that run, did they add anything to make the team better?
I mean, I'd have to go back
Kurt
and look
Thomas,
at it.
How'd they get Tim Thomas?
Tim Thomas certainly helped out, and that was not a big money signing. That was just something that, lightning in a bottle.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that team did that for a lot of guys. A lot of guys wanted to come here because they knew, wow, I'm going to get a lot of shots. I'm going to get numbers. I'm going to get the ball.
Now, and I'm bringing that up only because fast forward to today, and it's not going to be a superstar that they add, but when the trade deadline comes around, would they be willing to take on a little more money for that missing piece that could get them over the hump this year or next year? Or is it going to be sort of, let's stay steady with what we have now, maybe even next offseason, stuff like that?
I think that's kind of a slippery slope because as we sit here right now, and we've talked to people who have experience in front offices in the league where you ask that question, what is this team, what is the ingredient that they're even missing to go out and identify it to put them over the hump? And nobody can answer that question. This is a deep veteran team. So I want to guard against it. You know, if everything remains the same and relative health with the Suns, if they don't add a piece at the deadline through a trade or a buyout, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're not still invested in winning.
I know. I was not speaking particularly to this year.
Sure. I'm more addressing what Jarrett said.
And for me to address what Jarrett says, I would say I don't even know if you should. For a lot of different reasons, I think this head coach has to lock down into a more set rotation and a better kind of semblance of where you're going and how you're going to allocate minutes. I'm not necessarily sure that another guy to come in is the answer. But like I said, if I'm going to identify the guy, if I'm going to look at an issue that would require that, it would be this, the hands of DeAndre Ayton, and can you pass him the ball in end game situations? But I think DeAndre can sharpen that up. I mean, he's done it before. It's not like you said, it's not like he's a guy that, this is like a second baseman who suddenly can't throw the ball to first.
Yeah, the yips.
Chuck Knobloch.
Yeah, that's kind of what it is.
But to your point, I mean, we've talked so much, and here's another, I'll play this, another snippet from that podcast from Bill Simmons and Zach Lowe talking about what they think the Suns could ideally do in the playoffs. And then we'll circle back around to something you said.
I like watching the potential of the team. I think about as I watch them and is this a team that we might see in round two, round three? Cause I've talked about this
round
before.
Three. Ooh, that's spicy.
Well, it's a weird season. There's going to be some injury that we're not expecting. And there's
look, I like Phoenix, but round three means you beat Utah or one of the LA teams. Probably.
Yeah, listen, I'm ready for it to see a weird team in one of the two conferences. I'm with you. They're probably not going to make round three, but it's a team that really knows who they are in the last 5 minutes of a game. And I think that's a really important trait.
That's CP.
Awesome score and they have an awesome leader in CP, and Booker can get his own shot. And the ceiling for them is going to be Booker, who the reason he made the All-Star team is the way he played the first, I would say, 4 or 5 weeks. But he's also a guy that could, in the month of March, if you told me he's going to average 32 points a game and be the player of the month, I wouldn't be surprised. And when I talk about round three potential for them, for me, it's can Booker become a guy who can go toe-to-toe in a playoff series against the other team's best guy? And then is Ayton going to get better over these next 2 months?
The point to focus on, again, is Bill Simmons. This is a team that knows who they are in the last 5 minutes of the game. And I'm not attacking you, but circling back to what you said, can you throw the ball to DeAndre Ayton in late-game situations? The question should be, should you? If you've got two closer threats,
That's true.
You know, it's an embarrassment of riches in that area, really, to have Chris Paul and Devin Booker in tight late-game situations. If DeAndre Ayton is on the floor and scoring, it's because he got an offensive rebound and a follow. Mm-hmm. I'm not throwing the ball to him.
Yeah.
And that's not a knock on DeAndre right now. It's frustrating to see what's happening with the hand, certainly. But his importance offensively has dropped off on this team.
Yes. And so, that's been a good thing. That's been an asset for this team.
And yes, I understand the play that you're referencing from the Charlotte game where Devin Booker he's cutting through the lane and didn't even look like he was expecting a pass, judging from the reaction. It wasn't. You know, it wasn't a horrible pass. It's certainly a pass that an NBA big man should make. But I'm not throwing the ball to him in that situation.
Yeah. I know. I think when teams start silently making those decisions, I don't know if that's a team I trust. But I do agree with you that probably is the end game solution right now.
But I also think in quarters 1 through 3. The Suns do need to do a better job of getting DeAndre Ayton consistently involved. And if he feels that confidence early in games, that'll carry over to those late game situations. Maybe you do develop a third late game threat with a low post guy in DeAndre Ayton. I think it just needs to improve throughout the game.
Now, it'll be interesting to see if the team's success this year and next year kind of determines the future of DeAndre Ayton for Robert Sarver. Like, if the team looks like they're going to make the playoffs this year, and if they get a little bit even better next year and make a run in the playoffs, I hate to use the phrase, does he have any choice, but could you justify not giving Ayton a big when he's a piece of a team that's doing that well?
I find it hard to believe that will be the conclusion of all of this. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to get his money.
I would bet on yes. I'm not as confident as you are, though. I would bet he will, but he's going to have to get markedly better, knowing Robert Sarver's risk tolerance, for him to get that money. I believe somebody told me that it was that for all the credit that Robert Sarver got for signing Chris Paul, this was an easy sign for him because he knew Chris Paul. He knows how good he is. He knows how famous he is. It was not nearly as risky as some people wanted to seem. And that was the way Robert Sarver framed that. Now, I don't know. I don't know if he's going to look at DeAndre Ayton and just say, absolutely, pay the man. Because you have to keep Mikal Bridges. Mikal Bridges is a player. His value well exceeds those numbers he gives you to me. The defensive assignments he willingly takes, the good vibage, the intelligence.
Is he kind of a version of Sean Marion on this team? Or is he not quite?
Because he's not as flexible offensively as Sean Marion, or I don't think as explosive offensively as Sean Marion. I think the defensive comparisons are, you know, they're not the identical defensive player, but.
Well, just sort of that they give even more than team than what the statistics show.
True. I mean,
just real quick, could you justify giving, let's say it's what Bill Simmons says, 4 years, $100 million. You could justify giving $25 million a year to Mikal Bridges.
That's business,
but not
of the NBA.
$30 million a year for Ayton.
I think that's
is
probably
Bridges more valuable. Or that close in value? I don't know.
Something you brought up earlier, too, that Robert Sarver didn't bat an eye when giving $158 million to Devin Booker.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, in the summer of 18, the Suns were coming off a 21-win season, where the landscape around Devin Booker at that point was barren, and he didn't bat an eye.
That is true.
And it's turned out to be the right move, and the subsequent moves that have followed, and James Jones has done a really good job of being the architect of this team. I just think when you look at the history of that, the Suns are a playoff team. You know, you got two national experts talking whether or not they can make it to the second or third round of the playoffs. And if they get into the third round, who knows what happens? I just think it's not a no-brainer. But to me, it's inching towards no-brainer territory.
Okay. Again,
unless something weird happens,
sounding like I'm repeating myself here. I think in the case of all of this, a lot of this is going to have to be played out. I don't think it's going to be a no brainer at all. But
okay.
I do think James Jones has earned a lot of trust.
I agree.
In terms of what he's building and what the results. So I would think that if you were Robert Sarver and you've had failed executives before and you've had disappointments before, and if you had James Jones saying, look, you need to pay this guy, I think that that would carry some weight. But I also know that if you've got this much to win a championship, that pie is going to have to expand. I mean, because if it's a no-brainer to keep DeAndre Ayton, isn't it a no-brainer to keep Mikal Bridges?
I agree with that.
Well, the biggest question will be the Chris Paul thing.
And what happens at the end of this 2 years?
Because I don't even know if they could literally keep all three of those guys. It's just not possible.
Well,
they'd be paying like the Golden State Warriors like $90 million in penalties or whatever.
Yeah, but Chris Paul's annual salary at the end of this is not going to be $44 million a year.
He's also not going to come back for $5 million, though.
I mean,
maybe. I don't know.
Who knows? I mean, there's a lot, obviously, that we don't know. And it's exciting that we're even talking about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to keep signing him would only happen if he kept playing at the level he is.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to take a big pay cut. Of all people, he's the head of the players union.
He'll be 37.
But if he's still playing at this level, he's not taking a pay cut. He can't. He won't. He runs the players' union. He's going to, at the front of the players' union, he's going to, okay, guys, we have to maximize our revenues, but I'm going to go play for $8 million bucks because we have a good thing in fee. That's not happening. Not happening.
The pie's got to expand. That's the takeaway from all of this.
Yeah.
Coming up next, the Arizona Cardinals, 5 draft picks in the upcoming draft. And let's just face it, they got to get better at identifying prospects and developing them. It's a key year. We'll get into a study that shows just how important this is for the Cardinals next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Well, we're confident we're putting a championship team in place moving forward.
That was a snippet of an answer Steve Keim gave to Duggan Wolf on Newsmakers Week last week, general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, putting a championship team together moving forward. It is of the utmost importance at this time of year because we're getting closer to the NFL draft, April 29th. Cardinals with the 16th overall pick in the first round, 5 picks overall. Without statistical analytic analysis, casual Cardinal fans could say Steve Keim and his staff need to do a better job in the draft. That's unequivocal.
That would be one of the biggest understatements of the week.
But we saw this on Pro Football Focus, a new historical look at historical draft success for all 32 NFL teams. It's put together by Timo Riske, I believe it's pronounced. And it uses the measure Pro Football Focus WAR, wins above replacement of the respective player over the first 4 years in after being drafted. There's also a graphic where all the teams are plotted out, and they come to the conclusion that thanks to Patrick Mahomes, the Kansas City Chiefs have had far and away the best drafts over the last 4 years based on the PFF WAR. On the other end of the spectrum, it's not particularly close.
No.
That the Arizona Cardinals are 32nd in this very same study.
The analytic data, when it stares you in the face with the Cardinals draft history, not just how bad it is, but how bad it is in comparison, it just makes you shake your head. I know going into, I believe it was last year's draft, maybe 2 years ago, I believe it was last year, Steve Keim came out and said things to the extent of he had delegated too much, that he got back into the to the nuts and bolts of it all. Do you remember that? Was that going into last year's draft?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. And I think there was at a time when Terry McDonough had a big role in the organization, mm-hmm. and you put the pieces together, and it was almost as if Steve Keim came out and said, look, we've been doing this wrong. That we needed to kind of get a different structure with me back in the room and doing more of the grunt work or whatever. And I don't know if last year's draft results speak to anything that looks any better than what we've seen the last 4 years.
No, I mean, if you look at the numbers, too, the WAR above expectation, the Cardinals are past -5. The Raiders were next on the list in between -4 and -5. Eagles, Dolphins, Bengals, Broncos, Patriots, Giants, Jets, Packers were all -1 mm-hmm. or worse.
But they were only, I mean, they were a full loss worse, WAR above expectation,
uh-huh.
than the second worst team in the NFL. That's how bad they've been. I mean, it's frightening.
And that was even last year. I expected their production numbers from the draft class to be near the bottom, and they were near the bottom, and I'm talking about 30 or lower.
Mm-hmm.
There were teams that got less from their draft picks last year than the Cardinals even did.
Yeah.
You rated
all of Steve Keim. I remember you did this last year. You rated all of Steve Keim's draft picks. I would be tempted to say from in the bottom quadrant of that list, say from pick 38 to 40 or 53 or 40 to 53, most of those are going to be recent variety.
I pulled the list up right here, and it's been in the works for the last couple of years, updated. I haven't updated it, you know, with last year's draft class, but where did you say? What territory are you talking about?
I said you could start from like around 38 to 53, somewhere around there.
Okay. Yeah, it was 53 going into last year. 38. Deontay Thompson, 2019. Michael Dogby, 2019. Cole Toner, 2016. Logan Thomas, 2014. The other recent guys that show up in that range, mm-hmm. Joshua Miles, Hakeem Butler, probably going to fall on that list after not making the team in year two.
Oh, that's rough. Yeah.
Right. Lamont Gilliard will probably go up a little bit. Caleb Wilson didn't make the team as Mr. Irrelevant. Yeah, these will all get updated, but I remember coming up with the idea to do that a few years ago, and I remember my reaction in putting together the top of the list, and it was like, ugh, he's this high?
Mm-hmm.
That's not good.
No, no. So this is kind of what, you know.
The other sad thing is if you scroll through those graphs on this PFF piece, they have all different kinds of metrics. The Cardinals are last place in every single one. All the other teams move around depending on what they're doing. The Cardinals are last in every single one.
Mm-hmm. I know. And that really is, to me, kind of one of those catch-22s about this upcoming season. So much is going to be right on these free agent acquisitions, which Steve Keim has done better than drafting. That's pretty obvious. But...
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the three methods of player acquisition, I think Steve Keim is elite in one of those areas. I think he's middle of the pack in one of those areas, and I think he's well below average in one of those areas.
That's true.
It's strange.
That's how you get an 8-8 team. Really?
I guess if it all evens out, you can't get more even than 8-8.
He's been particularly bad at building offensive lines, which is strange because that's the position he played. And he's been particularly bad at bringing in wide receivers, targeting the right impact wide receiver. Now, that can be tricky. I understand that. To me, the other thing that I still don't think the Cardinals have figured out, I think they were better at it last year, just general physicality. And to me, this idea of teaching physicality, no. Two-a-days, padded practice, no. You draft guys who love to play physical. And the Cardinals drafted a lot of finesse guys. I mean, they've drafted smallish offensive linemen. They drafted Jonathan Cooper, who was known for anything but his physicality. He was known for his mobility. Now, they haven't always allocated big, high-rent district draft picks to offensive linemen In fact, the Levi Browns and the Jonathan Coopers of the world, they're the exception. They've tried to attack that position from the fifth and sixth and seventh round quite frequently in their past. But physicality, I think this team needs more of it. They got a little better last year. They need more of it. Because that seems to me to be a highlight of if you really love the game of football, how do you show that? You show that by playing really hard and hitting really hard and enjoying hitting hard. And that to me is it. That's always the takeaway, that there's the disconnect there. Steve Keim always says, I look for the what's inside the person, because you're going to miss on their heart. So I need to know a guy's going to love football. I don't think you love football if you don't play physical.
Yeah, but you never know. And it's not like these teams, and the Cardinals included, it's not like they're not doing their diligence on prospects.
No, true.
It's kind of a flaw of the system. It's a job interview. So you meet with these teams mm-hmm. in a normal year at the combine, and yes, you're talking about how much you love football and how much this means to you. It doesn't. We have a recent example from around the league. The Tennessee Titans are beside themselves over their first-round pick from a year ago, Isaiah Wilson. Their general manager came out publicly and said the guy who was on the field last year was not the guy that we scouted.
Isn't that unbelievable? Yeah, so, right. I know, and that's a real indictment of the system and a real soft spot in the system, that you get X amount of minutes with these guys, and every one of these guys have now gone through media training, practice interviews, rehearsing answers, mm-hmm. all of that stuff.
And part of the process, and I'm sure it has been for a long time, but I think it's becoming more and more necessary, is part of the process being how sharp is your BS meter?
Why do you think Kyler Murray struggled in that environment? We've all seen how he interacts with the media. Can you imagine him being poked and prodded in one of these things? I'm sure he hated it.
I'm sure he did.
A lot of football players are like, okay, this is, I know what to do here. I got this. Happy face. Mm-hmm. Say everything you want to hear.
It's not an easy thing to do.
No.
And a lot of it, I mean, I'm not absolving the record, and going back to that analytic study from Pro Football Focus, you can't absolve the track record,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of it's really good luck, too. So it's not like Steve Keim is drafting prospects nobody ever heard of in certain spots. These guys are all going to be drafted by NFL teams. Just a matter of how it works out. It is the ultimate crapshoot. And it's got to come up positive one of these years, doesn't it?
Well, you would hope. I mean, you'd really, because you're right. They're doing due diligence. They're hiring NFL caliber people. They're just choosing poorly on draft day. And again, I think the process might be muddled. I would really encourage the owner to stay out of the draft room going forward. I don't know if it's an issue or not, but I would highly encourage it. After that, with that video I saw of him asking Cliff Kingsbury about Andy Isabella, let those guys make these choices. And that's a hard thing to do. We just heard that criticism of Daniel Snyder, right? The former GM said, yeah, we did research on these guys. We studied this stuff every day for months. And then he comes in off his yacht and makes the pick.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to tell your boss to get out of the room.
Very well said. Very well said.
Coming up next, Diamondbacks start Cactus League play on Sunday. We will welcome their manager, Torrey Lovello, to the show for the first time in the 2021 season. Next, it's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Diamondbacks All Access Week with Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
I mean, I'll put our guys up against anyone. You know, I think last year, I think we didn't play our best baseball. I still think that we're just as good as anyone. You know, the nine guys we put on the field, I mean, we're going to compete regardless. And you know, obviously, there's new guys in the bullpen, and you know, one or two guys starters. So, I mean, I'll put our guys up against anyone.
That's Alex Young, Diamondbacks pitcher, who's joined us earlier this week as part of D-backs All Access Week. Put our guys up against anybody. We talked earlier about that being kind of the theme, at least in our interviews and the other interviews on the station this week. There's a lot of optimism internally with the Arizona Diamondbacks, as well there should be at this time of the year. But you're going in with a clean slate, and another theme that was pretty evident in our conversations this week, Bickus, these guys that were on the team last year, that left a bad taste in their mouths. It was only 60 games, didn't go according to plan, but they are chomping at the bit to get an opportunity to wash that away.
Yeah, listen, and they're all aware of the Padres, they're all aware of the Diamondbacks, or they're all aware of the Dodgers, that's obvious. You're hearing a lot of internal confidence.
Yes.
Not a surprise, but it's good to hear nonetheless.
And we continue D-backs All Access Week with the manager himself, Torrey Lovello, as he joins us here on the Colter Automotive Group Sports Line. Torrey, thanks for the time today. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
Good. We were just talking about the theme, and we've talked to a lot of players this week. We've had one on every day, and the other shows have as well. There's a lot of internal optimism and also a feeling of, let's get at this so we can wash away what was a short but painful 2020 season. How much do you pick up on that so far?
Yeah, I think I very much so. These guys are in a good spot, and this is what I told the group. You know, we got to turn that pain and frustration into growth. I believe that's what winners do, and that's been the common theme for me in talking about last year. And I think we've completely turned the page off of last year. And these guys are in an extremely good spot. It's a good team of players. You know, we believe in something that we're doing every single day, and we want to get better every single day and then see where that lands us.
All right. So if this is to happen, and this team has been really good from a position of being underdogs in the past, what is that going to look like? What is this baseball team going to look like if you really are to compete with the Padres and Dodgers?
Yeah, well, that's such a good question. And look, respectfully, we know what they've done, and they've loaded up, and they deserve all the chatter that they're getting. But what I've been telling these guys is not to worry about that. Let's put it on ourselves. Let's block out all that black noise and go out today and take care of what we can right in front of us. And, you know, at the end of a 162-game schedule, who knows where that's going to land. And I believe we have the right mindset to kind of take care of business inside of our clubhouse. And these guys are a good team here. We got, if you look at our lineup, you look at our players, we got some very talented players that are hungry. I think last year's frustration has led to a lot of hunger and a lot of focus and a lot of effort, and that's what I'm seeing right now early in camp.
Torrey Lovello, manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. I heard your interview with Burns and Gambo where you kind of admitted it, Torrey. You said, I put too much pressure on these guys last year in addition to the pressure that was, you know, inherent in a 60-game schedule. But going the way that it did this offseason, how much did you pour over and agonize over what went wrong and how it went wrong?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I'm a human being, and I know that there are fans across the valley that care a lot, but I can promise you that the area that I cared most about was how I can improve and what happened and facing that head on. And, you know, I asked a lot of people in my inner circle and some from outside of my circle, you know, what they saw and what it looked like. And so I did a lot of soul searching, but I didn't want to pass it over and gloss over and say that everything was fine, because it wasn't. There were some things that I needed to get better at, and I started to address that right away. So there's a period of transition for me, you know, maybe early December, where I started to get that right mindset that's pushing me in the right direction. And look, I'm the leader of this team, and I've got to be accountable, and I got to be ready for these guys as I stand in front of them, you know, early in camp, and tell them that we are a good baseball team. And I think we're building that trust, and we're pushing in that direction every day.
All right, there's going to be a lot of focus on your opening day starter, because there's a feeling that maybe Zach Gallen is ready to be a frontline ace. I'd like you to talk about that, and also start, who's starting your Cactus League opener?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and tell you that Zach Gallen is going to start the Cactus League for us on Sunday. And then as far as the opening day starter, you know, look, I've done it in years past where I've just waited it out until we get through a camp that's healthy. You know, we certainly know the candidates that we do have, but I don't want to play our hand out right now. I just want a lot of these guys to go out and compete and do what they're supposed to do in camp, and take it from there. But, you know, I know that there's going to be a heightened sense based on some of the things that happened last year, but I'm going to block all that out. I'm going to make the best decision that's going to help us win a baseball game.
Torrey Lovello, manager of the D-backs, our guest here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Another pitcher who was fantastic last year for a short time, Merrill Kelly, before you lost him with the injury. In that last game, when he left the game in Oakland, you guys were 13-12. We know what shook out, and I know he's back and ready to go 100%. But how big of a blow was that to lose Merrill Kelly, and what kind of effect did you think that had on the team?
Yeah, you know, he was one of our guys. He was dotting it up real good, and every fifth day he was giving us a really good chance to go out and win a baseball game. So, you know, I'll never forget the conversation that I had with him inside of my office at Chase when he couldn't go any longer. He went as hard as he could, and, you know, he went well above and beyond what the expectations were, knowing that he wasn't feeling 100%. So that day was a tough day for me, and he looked me square in the eyes, and he said, "I promise you I'm going to be back. I promise you I'm going to get back to that level of competition, and I'm going to go out and do the exact same things that I've been doing." So he hasn't let me down. I can tell you from what I've seen so far early in camp that he's in an extremely good spot. He's healthy. The circulation in the right arm is exactly what it's supposed to be, and I thanked him for what he did last year, because he put himself in a very uncomfortable situation where he wasn't feeling right, but he was competing at a high level, and we're watching that take place again this year.
All right, it was horrible hearing what Mike Hazen is going through with his wife and his family, and obviously our hearts go out with him as they try to battle through all of that. But the idea that this is going on behind the scenes, clearly you knew about it. Clearly the organization knew about it. It kind of reframes some of your struggles, at least in my opinion, that you might have had last year, because, you know, Mike's a great architect, and he's deserving of a lot of praise for what he's done up to this point. How does that fit into the grand scheme of everything, you guys having to get through that last year and still go through that now?
Yeah, I mean, those are the behind-the-scenes, real-life things that take place in our world that, you know, we don't necessarily expose to everybody else. And, you know, Mike and Nicole are very private, but we, being as close as we are with the Hazens, our wives are practically like sisters. We were aware of what was happening, and, you know, we are part of that support system for him every single day, and that will never change. But, you know, the beauty of what Mike was able to do was possibly compartmentalize. Obviously there were probably some very tough days when he would come to the ballpark, but he did. And as long as I've known Mike Hazen, he's always answered the bell. He's always been there and guiding this ship. And I don't think that'll change. I know that, she's a very special woman, and she's fighting the fight, and we're there with her, and that'll never change as well.
Tori Lovello, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. I guess the area where you have the most new faces is in the bullpen, when you bring in guys like Soria and Davinsky, and Tyler Clippard's deal was finalized today. How hard is it, generally speaking, Tori, to sift through the new faces and really assemble a bullpen every year?
I got to tell you, there are so many new faces that early in camp I had to carry a card around with names and numbers, right? Because I'm like, everybody starts to look alike, trust me, for the first couple of days. So it's a great point. But, you know, you start to lock down on these guys, and you do start to put face with names, and that relationship starts to take over. But we feel very fortunate about some of the key additions, the names that you just brought up. You know, Soria has done it very long time at a very high level. You know, bringing in Clippard is another tremendous sign for us. He's been doing it at a very high level for a long time. So we like where that's heading. We like the names that are joining from within our system that are very competitive and want to show us what they could do. So I'm looking for a really healthy spring training, especially with those guys in the back end. I'm sorry, the guys that are in the bullpen that are competing. They know there's a wide open competition with a lot of openings, and it should be very interesting as we wind down through the course of the spring.
All right, well, I really hope you guys make all this optimism come to life. If nothing else, it'll be just great to have baseball with fans out this weekend. So good luck to you, Tori.
All right, boys. Good talking to you. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Tori. Tori Lovello, manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. Coming up next, 1 o'clock, time for some social studies. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.